May it please the court. My name is Mark Simon, bar number 18578. I represent Mountain Medical in this appeal. I've represented them in the underlying claim as well. Mountain Medical was not a party to the claim, but was involved as healthcare providers to a plaintiff who was involved in the claim. So I represent an entity that was not a party to this case. I became involved in the case because of a subpoena duces tecum, which was directed by the defendant to Mountain Medical, which was later found by the court to be partially overreaching and was in part quashed. Subsequent to that, there was a Rule 30B6 deposition for which my client produced its corporate attorney, an attorney named Ron Antonio, and subsequently produced a healthcare provider and representative of Mountain Medical named Nancy Smith, who's here today. During the course of all this, I was found in contempt. There's no question at all about whether or not I was found in contempt, and there's no question at all about whether or not I was punished for it. The findings against me for contempt awarded the defendant's attorney approximately $10,000 in attorney's fees, which were garnished by him from my law firm business operating account. So the first factual issue I want to touch upon, because it suggested somehow in the answer brief that I wasn't found in contempt, is how clear it is that I was. The court's order of November 6th was issued about 5 months after this June hearing. Page 286 of the record, and it recites that the matter came before the district court for a hearing on a motion for contempt and a contempt citation, which was issued against my client, Mountain Medical.
Mr. Simon, let me ask you, it's been a while since any of us were in private practice, but it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that forms of order are provided to opposing counsel to be approved before they're submitted to a court. 5 months after these events, did you get a copy of the form of order that the judge ultimately signed?
What happened was that at the hearing of June 13th, the court made verbal findings and did not reduce them to writing until November 6th.
Yes, I'm talking about the written order that the judge ultimately signed 5 months later.
No, I didn't get a form of the order for approval. I just got the order itself.
Mr. Simon, to follow up on that, the court suggested counsel for Mr. Redfoot should submit a proposed order in conformance with the bench ruling. Do you know if that happened or if the written order is the product of the trial court?
My recollection is that the written order was a product of the trial court, but I can't tell you for sure.
You don't know
whether this was a proposed form of order or what the judge ultimately did. Okay, so of course the judge did ultimately endorse it by signing it anyway, finding me in contempt and going on to say that Simon is guilty of indirect contempt in connection with noncompliance with the subpoena. So it's very clear that I was found in contempt by the judge. The purpose of the hearing on June 13th was a hearing on a contempt citation previously issued by the court and directed to Mountain Medical. I recognized that I couldn't and shouldn't represent Mountain Medical that day, so another attorney represented them, David Strom, and I appeared to support Mountain Medical's argument that they complied with the subpoena and they complied with the rules of procedure, and I actually testified as a witness at that proceeding, and I had no idea that I was going to be subject to a contempt citation. So here's the problem, is that I wasn't afforded any due protection. I had no earthly idea that the judge was considering issuing a contempt citation against me, and the court did not comply with the civil rules of procedure, Rule 107, which would have given me an opportunity to defend myself against the contempt charges, which is an opportunity that I never was given by the district court. And it would have given me an opportunity to request that a different court hear the contempt citation against me. And it would have given me a chance to present evidence that I wasn't in contempt because I didn't violate a court order and I didn't fail to comply with the rules of procedure. Let's talk about that court order, which I supposedly violated. Earlier in this case, I referenced there was a motion to quash. So my client received an overreaching subpoena from the defendant. I entered my appearance. I filed a motion to quash. That motion was partially granted. The subpoena was found to be overreaching, so the district court judge found the subpoena was overreaching. He ordered my client to produce records that were requested in the subpoena due to Steakum. This is in the record at page 114. My client, within a week, produced the records which were ordered to be produced. So my client complied with the order. This is the order of January 25th of 2013, and I supervised their compliance with the order, and there's just no question about it that we complied with this order. The order goes on to recite, the defendant shall be permitted to re-notice the Rule 30b-6 deposition of Movement Mountain Medical Care. And that's what happened. So my client complied with the court order from January, designated their corporate attorney as the Rule 30b-6 designee. The deposition of the corporate attorney occurred. At that deposition, the defendant's counsel expressed dissatisfaction with the identity of the opponent, the designee. So, 2 days later, in exhibit to the record, page 216, there's a letter from me to Mr. Fish that says, you are offered the opportunity to take the deposition of some other corporate representative. So as soon as 2 days after the deposition of the corporate attorney, Ron Antonio, my client, Mountain Medical, was in a position and had decided to tender a second corporate representative in response to this far-reaching Rule 30b-6.
Mr. Simon, did your response put the burden on the other party to designate an individual? Did you offer Ms. Smith at the time in that communication?
Ms. Smith had actually been offered earlier in an earlier court proceeding, and the subject of that proceeding was that earlier? The subject of that proceeding was motion, I believe it was on the initial motion to quash, and I have briefed this subject. So there have been a number of times when Ms. Smith was specifically designated, including a time when we were appearing before the court. For example, the court agreed at the hearing on June 13th that Ms. Smith had been tendered, specifically tendered, on May 14th, and the court noted that.
I see where the court says that that you, Mr. Simon, was making her available as a representative of Mountain Medical Care as a 30B6 representative, but the court says, despite communication that took place between April 30 and May 24, when Mr. Simon confirmed that she was not somebody he would make available to depose. I'm struggling with that.
Right, and that directly contradicts statements made by the court. On page 6, lines 7 through 9 of that same June 13th transcript, if I could reference it. So what my client was struggling with at the time, Judge, was the Rule 30b-6 corporate deposition request, notice of deposition, seemed to request, you know, in hindsight, both the expertise of the corporate attorney as well as healthcare providers from Mountain Medical.
I suppose you could have designated both.
I think it would have been perfect to do that, yes. And, you know, in hindsight, sure. And so the question then becomes, is it a violation of the rules of civil procedure to such an extent that contempt citations should be contempt and attorney's fees should be awarded against my client in favor of the defendant? And that's one of the questions in the abuse of discretion part of the case. Now, with regard to me, it's clear that I was found in contempt, that I wasn't afforded the protections of Rule 107. I was never the subject of a contempt citation itself, and I didn't receive any notice that there was going to be a contempt proceeding against me personally.
Mr. Simon, and I looked through the record, I didn't see any motions under 37. Were there any motions to compel filed in this case?
No, there weren't. And at one point, I did ask the judge, when he granted the contempt citation, to please reconsider, and I filed a motion for reconsideration of the contempt citation, asking the court, can we please proceed as though this was a discovery issue as opposed to a contempt issue? And I, you know, cited many of the same reasons that my client had complied with the rules of procedure and was not in contempt that day at that proceeding, which I recollect was in May.
It appears now that Mr. Redfoot's counsel would like us to affirm based on Rule 37. Can you respond to that?
Well, this is clearly a contempt proceeding, and I was found in contempt, and my client was found in contempt. That was the notice we had received, is that this would be a contempt proceeding. The sanctions included an award of discovery, or an award of attorney's fees against me, and we would have prepared a different defense and defended the claim differently if it had been a discovery issue, as opposed to an actual contempt issue. Among other things, I probably wouldn't have testified. I was never aware of the fact that I was going to be, you know, the target of an award of attorney's fees here. And my summary of my argument is simply this. I was found in contempt and I was punished, and I didn't receive due process, and I didn't receive the protections of Rule 107, and I didn't violate a court order. And with regard to Mountain Medical, they didn't violate a court order either. And when it became apparent that their first corporate designee was, although found by the district court judge to be legally adequate, was only partially good enough for the situation and to satisfy the defendant's attorney, we promptly designated a second corporate representative. And so that's not contemptuous behavior. That's cooperative behavior, and that's compliance, substantial compliance with the rules of civil procedure. We acted promptly, Mountain Medical, you know, by and through me, acted promptly in designating a second corporate representative, and they did so without a court order. And I would just remind your honors that Ron Antonio was found to be a legally adequate corporate designee by the judge, although he found him only partially adequate. So we remedied the situation by designating a second corporate representative who in reality was there to testify as a healthcare provider. So that kind of gets back to the fact that this Rule 30b-6 notice of deposition included corporate issues as well as healthcare provider issues. You know, and to respond to Judge Graham, yeah, in a perfect world, if I could go back and do everything differently, I would have designated two corporate representatives at the same time. At the time, it appeared to me, acting in good faith, that the designation of the corporate representative alone would be sufficient. And when it turned out not to be sufficient, we promptly, and I say promptly, within a month, tendered Nancy Smith, who was then deposed. And then I'll reserve my remaining 2.5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Kenneth Fish. My registration is 6355. I'm representing Robert Redfoot, who's the defendant in the underlying action. And let me go to some of the initial questions and then the arguments I wanted to hit upon. Yes, Judge Graham, there was a proposed order that was drafted and submitted following the June 13, 2013 hearing that in fact I had ordered a transcript and tried to incorporate Judge Haglund's findings. He did not, that was circulated. There was no response to that by anyone, including eventually Judge Haglund, who did his own order. The substance on some of the key matters were essentially what I had put in, I thought, within my proposal, but it was not signed off as such, but that was circulated.
Is a copy of your proposed order in the record, do you know?
I haven't looked for it, so I can't tell you that. I think everything that was filed, even well after all of this, is in the record. You know, everything preceding any of these activities. This really gets down to two different appeals on two different grounds by two different people for two different reasons, asking that you have to determine whether the broad discretion granted to trial courts to exercise their inherent, and I say their indispensable, authority to assure that we get what Rule 1 tells us, a speedy, just, and inexpensive resolution of all matters that are presented.
Mr. Fish, pardon me. Do you agree the trial court held Mr. Simon in contempt?
No, I do not. Paragraph five tells you, of his order of November 6th, tells you what he did. He exercised his discretion under 37A4 and 37B.
But there was no motion for, to compel discovery.
There was no motion to compel discovery because there, you know, was, this was not a party matter.
And do you feel that the order, as it's written, makes all of the necessary findings under Rule 37 that are required before you can enter sanctions?
Yes, I believe it does, in the sense of his authority to hold an attorney jointly responsible for action that is inappropriate in delay of discovery. All of us are on notice when we walk through the door, whether it's Rule 37, whether it's Rule 121, Section 115, whether it is any of the various provisions that subject us, you know, to being sanctioned along with, or at times in lieu of, a client based on what we say. What happened with this is that you have heard what has been repeated as the appellant's theory of what the action concerns. For example, talking about a court order, this order that resulted from the March 21 hearing on their motion to quash, of to turn over certain records and to permit us to do the 30B6 deposition of this entity. If you look at the transcript of Judge Haglund's June 13, 2013 hearing, after all of the evidence before his ruling, counsel then for Mountain Medical Care LLC started to talk about the order to produce records. Judge Haglund stated clearly that is not at issue here. What was at issue was an April 12, that was actually a March 26 subpoena to appear. It was served on April 12. Pursuant to 30B6 and Rule 45, to have someone appear on April 30th who was qualified, as Judge Graham, you know, from the Horton decision just 5 years ago, or I guess 7 years ago now, someone who is qualified to address all the various issues. There was no dispute about the breadth of the eight categories, and we had someone show up. And we had a dispute as to whether that was adequate. We had a request during that, and you will have in the record that entire transcript. We had a request, are you going to make somebody else available? No. That was followed up with conversations. There was testimony before Judge Haglund on the citation, where he found as fact, contrary to the argument you just heard, that there was not prompt compliance, that there was not, you know, simply a matter of turning over records. This was a subpoena that was issued pursuant to the authority under Rule 45 for a proper 30B6 procedure. Whether that is one or five representatives, that's a party's obligation, an entity's obligation to decide. And we were not in any way offered Ms. Smith or anyone else as a substitute 30B6 representative. What we were told and what was testified to in June and found as fact by Judge Haglund was that we were not offered an additional 30B6 representative. To the contrary, we were told you can subpoena anyone else you want, period. And Judge Haglund goes on at length in his discussion following all the testimony in June that it was not our burden, not the defendant's burden, to go in and designate and then subpoena people would have the ability to answer the various areas. We don't know who could speak for that entity on that level.
Mr. Fisher?
Yes.
In your brief, and I'm quoting from page 13, you say, because Mountain Medical failed to provide supporting authority, the appellate court should affirm the trial court's finding of contempt. So I assume that at least part of the court's order dealt with contempt.
Oh, yes. As to Mountain,
as to Mountain Medical.
As to Mountain Medical Care, the court did find that the entity, and that's why, you know, we've got these consolidated matters, because they filed them as two separate appeals. The court did find that the entity had engaged in contemptuous behavior from May 1, the day after the aborted deposition, until May 24.
Was it afforded a an evidentiary hearing on contempt?
It certainly was.
Giving notice?
It was issued a citation. The citation issued on May 9, 2013. A hearing was set for June 13 to show cause.
But the court chose to fine Mr. Simon instead of Mountain Medical.
No. No, the court held them jointly and severally responsible for the fees. It found Mountain Medical his conduct had been contemptuous. It then went on and said that it had the authority, and this is paragraph 5, to also hold the attorney under Rule 37 responsible for those fees. And that's why in our brief we said they didn't raise the issue.
Excuse,
Rule 37.
Excuse my confusion here.
Okay.
I'm struggling with this.
Okay.
How could the court find Mountain Medical and Mr. Simon jointly and severally liable for the very same obligation, but choose to say, on the one hand, it was contempt, but on the other hand, it was a Rule 37 violation?
It could do it by, first of all, finding the entity, and this is what he explains in paragraph 5 of his order, that the onus is normally on the entity for contemptuous behavior. And that would be the Rule 107D sanction that he would impose on the entity. He then went on and said that he found counsel's behavior and involvement personally was so intertwined that he felt that counsel should be also responsible with the client jointly and separately under Rule 37 for the same amount that was being awarded as a remedial recovery under 107D2, I believe.
Mr. Fish, do you read Rule 37 to require a motion to compel before sanctions can be awarded?
I'm sorry?
Do you read Rule 37?
If I am dealing with a party, absolutely. I believe that Rule 37 requires that if you're in a straight discovery matter, I think that there needs to be a motion. Here, frankly, I don't think Rule 37, you know, would have been the proper avenue, you know, for going through and dealing with this matter at the outset. I think what happened was when you go through the arguments, even including the opening brief here, a lot of the authorities, a lot of the discussion is about Rule 37, because it's odd that we end up with parties in a case resolving everything. That case is settled and gone now, just last fall. But it's odd that you have a non-party coming in with a party that has, in fact, impacted the delivery of a just, speedy, inexpensive resolution.
Specifically, well, can you point me to language in Rule 37 that says it applies to non-parties?
No, I cannot. I cannot point to or say that it does not apply. What I can say in Rule 37 is that there is language about if, and this is 37D, if an entity, you know, fails to provide a proper representative under 30B6, then there are sanctions. And Judge Haglin did discuss both 37A4 and 37D in his fifth paragraph as to why he was also assessing fees or sanctions against Mr. Simon. He never says that Mr. Simon is being held responsible for contempt, and the procedures that he's talking about under 107D, those are 107D1 rights and procedures. That is when you have what we used to call criminal contempt as opposed to civil contempt up until we had the changes in Rule 107 in 1995.
Mr. Fischel, pardon me.
Okay.
The court says in its order, the court received evidence presented at the hearing and determined that non-party and or its then attorney Simon were guilty of indirect contempt. How is that not a finding that Mr. Simon's in contempt?
Because at that point, and that is what he had said, because he wanted to think it through at the end of, you know, the hearing. And that was something that was not in my proposed order. It was something at the end of the hearing from the bench on the record. He had, in fact, saying, now I've got to decide to what extent, if any, this is the responsibility of the entity or of the attorney. When in November, when I think he struggled with that, in November, when he wrote his order, is when he then went to the Rule 37 basis for holding Mr. Simon jointly responsible with his client.
If we were to conclude hypothetically that Rule 37 doesn't apply, is there any basis to affirm the fees against Mr. Simon?
Against Mr. Simon? Other than it was never argued, you know, there's no argument here about Rule 37, and we haven't had a chance to address it. The judge, that's what he did. If there was going to be an appeal and we were going to brief it and you were going to resolve it, that should have been brought up long before now. And that's why we said there's nothing that he did to preserve that. Keep in mind, there's still with his client the finding that there's been no showing that there was an abuse of discretion, that it was arbitrary, that it was unreasonable. The court gave all of the necessary procedural safeguards, tried to avoid the harm that ended up, in fact, our case, because of these delays, got delayed for a year. That was 2 weeks of court time. That was parties waiting another year for a new trial date. And that's exactly what is one basis under 107 and its definition of contempt that is to be subject to sanction if necessary. That's what happens here. The court exercised that discretion. I ask that it be affirmed. I ask that you exercise your discretion under 39.5, your rule, and find that this appeal is a matter related to contempt or is in connection with contempt proceedings under 107D2. Remand this, as this court has done in the past, to the trial court to determine whether fees should be awarded for this appeal, and if so, in what amount.
Against both Mr. Simon and Mountain Medical?
I certainly think that it's...
Because it's related to contempt under 107.
Against Mountain Medical, I think that is perfectly proper. This whole thing has been, it's related to contempt. This whole thing has been approached that way, you know, by the appellants.
Well, actually, you filed the motion for contempt, Mr. Fish. You're the
yes.
one that presented the discovery dispute in this manner.
I'm sorry?
You're the one that presented the discovery dispute as under Rule 107. You had
the
choice.
So,
What choice did you perceive that I had?
Do you agree you presented everything under Rule 107, your request for fees and contempt?
I presented, yes, I did.
And Mr. Fish, just, and I'm sorry to keep you,
no.
But just so I understand, since it's a matter related to contempt, we could order fees either way. We would have the power to award fees either against Mr. Simon and Mr. and Mountain Medical or against you.
No, sir, I don't think that, I mean, I think you have the discretion, Judge Graham, to find that this is in connection with a contempt proceeding and remanded under 39.5 for the trial court under 107D2 to then exercise the trial court's discretion as to, one, whether fees should be awarded, two, and if so, in what amount. And that's the same thing this court did in Madison Capital Company versus Star Acquisition.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your argument.
Very briefly, Your Honors, the deposition of Ron Antonio occurred on April 30th. Mr. Fish and I conferred about the adequacy of that deposition 2 days later. On May 2nd, I wrote a memorandum confirming, you know, the subject of our conversation. It's in the record at page 216 that says, as an accommodation, you were offered to take the deposition of some other corporate representative of the Mountain Medical Care, and you refused. And as Judge Graham pointed out, that was not a designation of Nancy Smith at that time. But the court's record does show that shortly thereafter, there was a formal designation of Nancy Smith as a second corporate representative. During the proceedings in June, I testified, you know, on behalf of my client, Mountain Medical, and the judge wanted to throw the book at me, not so much my client. Among the court's findings in the deposition transcript of June 13th of 2013, at page 132, he states, Mountain Medical Care is not really responsible for this. So I would submit that the court was headed off in the wrong direction in finding Mountain Medical in contempt. Certainly, Mountain Medical never violated a court order. And I'd just like to mention that I did try to convert this into a civil proceeding as opposed to a contempt proceeding when I appeared before the court shortly after the April 30th deposition. And the April 30th deposition occurred. The defendant's attorney, Mr. Fish, moved for contempt 2 days later on May 2nd. The contempt citation was granted without the opportunity for Mountain Medical to respond on May 9th. So the court had the motion for a contempt citation before it for only 7 days, and my client didn't have an opportunity to respond.
Well, as I understand contempt citations, it's just a show cause order to appear.
Yes, Judge.
Your client wasn't found in contempt on May 7th.
Right, and so I appeared in May before the contempt proceeding occurred and mentioned to the judge that the ex parte relief, you know, was granted the show cause order. It's
but a show cause order isn't relief. It's just saying, tell me why I shouldn't do this.
Okay, and the only reason I mention it, Judge, is I was at that point in time trying to convert this into a discovery proceeding. And so I asked the court, and I quote myself from that day in May, the relief that I'm requesting for my client today is to convert this into a regular discovery hearing as opposed to a contempt citation. So that's why I mentioned that, is I did try to head the whole contempt proceeding off at the pass and turn it into a regular discovery hearing, which of course did not occur. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for appearing this afternoon, making your arguments. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. I conclude.